Session number 27341, Reel 10.
Right, Reel 10.
Yeah. We had murder. Most of the murders were unpremeditated. We had a criminal code, which meant that there was mitigation was allowed for murders of passion, so people didn't get hanged if that was the case. And I don't remember ever having or knowing about a premeditated murder by an African. They didn't. They weren't that. That's not how they were built.
How would the murders occur then?
Well, a fight. That was mainly beer, fight, spear. I mean, an accident. Was they'd been hunting, and to hunt, they light a fire in the bush. And the grass burns, the animals run away from the fire, they line up on either side of where the animals are going to run and throw spears at the animal. Of course, the odd spear goes over the top and lands in somebody's belly. He dies. Murder! Murder, they cry. And so I had to go out, the first one I ever had to do, and find this poor man. Well, he was about 10 feet fat, and he was incredible. He was huge. But we took him off for a post-mortem, but it was a waste of time, really, because it was simply an accident. But they called it a murder. They called it a murder. So you go to a murder, but accidents, you just bury the individual and make a report where it was a proper accident. You don't bother with going into that, all that trouble.
Was that a linguistic thing, or was it...
It was the way it was reported, you see. It's not so much that they'd given the wrong information, it was just that it had been interpreted, perhaps, or somebody said there was a murder down in the village. You go and investigate it. When I got there, I found out what's happened, but I was new to the job then, so I thought, oh, well, I'll take the body back and establish that it was this thing. And I took a couple of witnesses, and they did a post-mortem, and yes, they said, yes, this is a spear thrust, and it was pretty obviously that what had happened. So, and the policeman came in and said, yes, somebody had thrown the spear, and it was Jolly Malanga, or whatever his name was, and he knocked out Chimbi and Mbwebwe. And so Chimbi and Mbwebwe was the body on the table, and then we buried him in the cabbage patch afterwards, and that was it.
You obviously had to learn the language. How easy was that to do?
It was Chinyanja. Well, we learnt it gradually over a period of time. You know, you sort of sit there with a book and you start, and you're talking to these boys all the time, of course, which becomes, you get tuned in. It takes quite a while to get tuned in because they're very deep voices, most of them, and guttural, and they chop their words off too, which doesn't help. A bit like the Portuguese. I'd learned Portuguese too, and that was another difficult language, but I've forgotten it now. Whatever we learnt, we lost.
Was theft a problem at all?
Yes, there was a few break-ins, theft of European property. Cattle theft was a big problem. The cattle theft we would send to the police, to the chief, because it turned out, for justice, what they wanted was compensation. Africans always wanted compensation. Rape was another one we'd send to the courts, the chief's court, because the chief would know how to handle it, because the families only wanted a cow. They didn't want their honour to be satisfied with somebody going to jail. It's no good at all. They wanted another cow for their own herd. So the father and mother of the raper would be taken to court and made to give a cow over to the poor girl's family who might or might not have been raped, but probably was.
So was compensation a driving thing in the cases, say, of murder that you
mentioned? It was sometimes, but no, it wasn't so much compensation. There was very often a flash of anger, which should mean somebody would call somebody a silly twit, and he hit him over the head with a club, and he was dead, and they died easy. Somehow or other, why, I don't know, but they seemed to die with a... Mind you, they were strong men. and hit by a club with a strong bias. There wasn't much chance of survival, I suppose. But there was quite a lot of that went on. And they would go to court, but plead mitigation, and there was always a lawyer that would look after them. And I never knew anybody but was hanged, actually. I never had to prosecute anybody for murder.
And what kind of temperament did the people have, did they?
Oh, very quiet. They would come to the police if they were in trouble. We were the sort of first people they would come to. The district commissioner's team were all located in one area, whereas the police were spread around, so they'd come to the police if they're in trouble. But most of the territories were run by the district commissioner's office. They called the provincial office, and the provincial commissioner was in charge of the whole of the area, and the district commissioner was the senior senior officer. He was a class one magistrate, and so he was, if you like, active. He was the active man. The provincial commissioner was a sort of titular job where he did a lot of the, I suppose, responsible for overlooking the activities of his various commissioners and seeing they're doing their job properly and possibly recording things. But certainly the district commissioner's officers were the active administration was carried out. And they were a nice bunch of blokes. In fact, I was offered a job with them when I left the police because I was coming to England, because Joan wanted to get home to see her folks, and we were going home. We were given 3 months leave. But I was written to and offered a job. I thought, well, the police isn't going to be around for long. We were closing up India. We were closing up all these colonies as fast as we could. And I thought, well, there's no long-term future here. So I wrote back and said, I'd like to come and talk to you about it. So when we got back home to England, I went and saw the Leyland Paints, it was. And the boss of Leyland Paints was a friend of my father-in-law. So he offered me a job. I took it.
What year was that?
1951.
Can I ask about, obviously, in that kind of environment that you're in, there's relatively few officials and police officers controlling such a large area. Yeah.
I was now 93rd since 1929 when this all started, the 93rd white police officer. And a lot of them had passed through the system. So there weren't many police officers in Northern Rhodesia.
Did it strike you as strange initially that you had such control over an area?
We were policemen. We weren't in charge of the area. We were the first line of defence. Insurgencies would be put down by the police. There weren't any. Riots would be put down by the police. We didn't have any. Job was administration, immigration, police activities of the policing kind. But the army wasn't the line of defence, it was the police that was the line of defence. But the whole thing packed up in 63. I mean, there is a police force still there, but it's not white-based, white-manned. It's now all the natives in... Zambians, and the whites all went in 63, and really and truly, in 63 I would have been what, 42 40 41. It's a silly age, I mean, to be thrown out of, because I doubt, I might have been lucky, I might have risen to quite high rank, as some of them did. Some of my fellow policemen were district commissioners, were assistant commissioners of police, and retired as such eventually, and some went off to New Zealand and Australia and South Africa. But to me, it didn't seem sensible to be doing that. It seemed to be a dead end thing. I had more exciting ideas, and so I came over here to England and started in business.
Thank you very much.